Welcome back to the Electric Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert, your host, and I'm joined with Seth Winshaw. How you doing, Seth?
I'm good, Fred.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the welcome back to North America.
Yeah, I just came back from a trip from Germany, so I'm still a big jet lag. If I crash during the show, you know why. You'll excuse me.
We'll talk about Chevy Bolts the rest of the time.
Yeah, it'll give an opportunity for Seth to talk a little more. But yeah, I went to Germany on BMW's dime. Actually, they invited me to Munich to check out their latest progress in their electric vehicle ambitions. And the goal of the trip apparently was to come out with a better understanding of their electrification plans, and especially their production plans and their fifth generation electric powertrain. So they are now their fifth generation, which we kind of knew about already when they announced the BMW iX3, which is the all-electric version of the iX3, of the X3, I should say. So we've seen the BMW i3, of course, back in 2013 when it was launched. And since it didn't really change much, at least not on a design perspective, but the powertrain evolved a little bit with more powerful electric motor. Last year, we saw the new 94 amp-hour cells being introduced, which of course made a much more energy-dense battery pack, with now the 33 kilowatt-hour battery pack that they offer now. So I assume that that's the fourth generation that was introduced, because I don't think there was any modifications since then. And now they're working on the fifth one, and the fifth one was going to be the iX3 in 2020. And so we put it in the podcast description and the podcast article that talked about this. It's pretty much just a podcast exclusive for now, because I started writing the articles, but they're not ready to be published yet. I'm going to have two articles that's going to come out probably this weekend or early next week, if not. One is going to focus, I'm going to talk about it now a little bit, about the fifth generation powertrain, and the other one's going to focus more about the actual electrification plans and the scale of BMW's ambition for electric vehicle and the production plan to get there, because of course it involves changing their current production assets, which are based on internal combustion engine right now, to electric motors, battery packs, and everything else that comes with electric vehicles. And so far, we haven't been a big fan, I think, for myself. I'm going to ask your opinion, Seth, on that too, but about the ambition of BMW's electrification plans. I don't know, what's your view right now? I didn't talk to you yet about what I heard this week.
Right, we haven't talked.
So, but right now, I think you would agree with me or my opinion at that time. We weren't really impressed by what BMW had in plans, right?
Well, so I was certainly happy about the i3 coming out early. I've been disappointed that the steps have been very incremental, where, you know, the i3S that's out now is just a little bit better than the i3 that debuted, you know, I think 6 years ago or something. It's like right after the Leaf. So it's disappointing, you know, and then the i8, which is barely electric, you know, it's got like a, I don't know, like a not even a 10 kilowatt hour battery in it. And, you know, if you hit the gas, anything more than like, you know, idling speed, then you're going to get out of electric. So it's not really an electric car by any standard. It's almost like a Prius. So that's disappointing. And I wonder, you know, we wonder if BMW is really serious about electrification, or if it's a kind of a compliance thing right now. So I'm interested to hear what happened.
Yeah, and for that's basically the current state of that you described, the current state of what BMW has on the market for electric vehicles. But they also already announced, and we reported on that a few times, what they plan for the future for EVs. And they've always been talking about the 15% to 25% of their vehicle being produced being electric, but electrified. That's always the bummer too, when you talk about electrified vehicles.
Oh yeah, so that's the other thing. BMW has this whole lineup of cars that have like 5 miles or 20 miles, five to, you know, I think the X5 or whatever has like 20 miles of range. So We actually reviewed the 330e, and that thing, like, as soon as you hit a small hill, would go to gas, even if you had full electric.
Mm-hmm.
So they have this whole lineup of cars that have a little bit of electric, and like, frankly, that's not going to do it.
Yeah, and they are sticking with that too, by the way. So the 15 to 25%, they say that's the mix of plug-in hybrids and BEVs, all electric vehicles, that's going to be in their lineup. And they don't know what's going to be the mix. So it's 15-25% of electrified vehicles. So that can mean PHEVs or BEVs. So that was the extent of our understanding until this week. Now, this week, the number came back again, like, a multiple time. We met, it wasn't just me, by the way, it was a group of reporters that they brought to Munich, and they had us like roundtable discussions with a bunch of high-level executives from BMW, from the product development side, so the people working on that fifth-generation powertrain, and just engineers, and then from the production side of things, how they are preparing to respond to the demand for EVs and all the planet. So during that production part of all the presentation that went over 2 day period, that 15-25% number came back often and often again, to the point where I asked, like, where is that coming from? Where do you see that 15-25% number come from? And that's when the other thing that was recurring during the presentations too is that it's driven by incentives. So they are driven by regulation right now. I think that's the case for most other automakers too. Automakers that have are still dragging that combustion engine business in the back. So they're seeing the regulation, and they're seeing EV demand being driven only by regulation, or mainly by regulations.
Right, and that's what we call compliance.
Yeah.
Cars.
So, yeah, that's the thing. You could even say, like, compliance cars, even if they plan, like, a big volume of it, like 15-25% of BMW's significant manufacturing capacity, it'd still be a compliance car, which is stretching the truth, of course, but still somewhat accurate if they keep focusing on that. So, for example, I brought up the example of Norway, which is at 50. Of course, if you don't know, at Electric, we think that 15-25% is ridiculous, because we all agree that at a point between, like, 2020 or 2025, there's going to be so many just great electric vehicles on the market in a bunch of different segments. That,
and also infrastructure is going to improve, and
yeah,
a lot of other things will happen.
That's the other big aspect too. So even looking at the market right now, or the historic market, the history of the market and the growth of electric vehicle, I don't think it's the best thing to look at to predict future growth. For example, I use Norway as an example, just to finish my thought. We think that between 2020 and 2025, there's going to be so many great electric cars on the market that most people that are looking for a new car, it's going to be hard for them not to go with an electric vehicle, not to want to go for an electric vehicle. That doesn't mean that everyone's going to be able to buy an electric car, because the production probably won't be there by then. No, actually, for sure won't be there by then. But you would want to. So the actual demand for electric vehicles is going to be way higher than the 15-25% that BMW is anticipating or not. And I use Norway as an example, which is over 50% already.
I think there are 56%.
Yeah, they closer to 60 at this point. So, and of course, BMW's head of production was, I have his name in my notes, but I don't have them right now, told me, yeah, but like we said, subsidies are incredible there. So, and no other market's going to have the same subsidies for EVs ever. And I said, sure, we agree with that, but you can put a value on those subsidies in Norway, like the exemption on the taxes, on VATs. You can even technically, you could try to put a value on the HOV lanes, and put a value on even the free parking in the cities, and all those subsidies together, you could put a value, add that to the value of the car, and then you can trend with your battery costs, and all your electric vehicle costs are decreasing. And there's going to be a point where the other markets without incentives, with just the progress of electric vehicles, like we said, between 2025, when the cost comes down and the better vehicles come to market, that it's going to be competitive with what is in Norway now with the incentive. So you cannot just look at the regulations in the market, I think.
And the BMW battery guys couldn't really grasp that? Is that what you're saying?
No, that wasn't the battery guys. That was the same guys, the same person I just referenced for the other production. Didn't have a great understanding of batteries and how it works. But and I understand, too, because it's not really his expertise.
Right. He was raised on petroleum stuff.
Yeah, he's a production guy. But one thing that this person said, because my point was always with talking with the production people at BMW, is that I think you're wrong with 15 to 25%. So if you're wrong, and in my view, you're going to be wrong, but in your view, if you, because they also said that they, like, it was pretty vague there, 15 to 25%, but they weren't sure about it at all. So he said, for example, if it's 40% that they need to produce in 2025, how quickly they can get there? That was my big question. I want to know how those big automakers can respond quickly to an increase in demand for electric vehicles. And that was, I was surprisingly, it was surprising to me what they said. So in terms of the production side of things, like the actual factory assembly and the biggest manufacturing assets, they were talking about a 12 months turnover to do that kind of increase from like a 25 to 50%, which is pretty insane, really, because only we're talking about hundreds of thousands, if not millions of cars at this point.
I mean, can they, you know, do they have the supply chain for that?
Yeah, that's my point. So that's just one part of the production chain. We also talked to like the people making the electric drivetrains for them, like the BMW head of electric drivetrains production. And she said 18 months. So like there's different parts of it. And of course, BMW doesn't have his own batteries, battery cells. So they make their own battery pack, but they buy their battery cells from Samsung SDI. And I think they're working also with a few other suppliers. So
So in the likelihood that, you know, they do need to go to 40%, it's not just BMW that needs to go to 40%, it's the whole industry.
Yeah, so that's
and that means there's not going to be a lot of extra batteries later.
No, I think the bottleneck is going to be batteries at this point for sure. So that was I was trying to emphasize during the whole trip to BMW. You need to think a little bigger with that stuff, conservative. But I was still encouraged by, like I said, like they still want to build some flexibility into their production system in order to be able to respond somewhat quickly if they are wrong about the demand, which I think they are. For example, a great thing. They are now they are building all the same, because they're going with a new platform with the fifth generation that incorporates their combustion engine vehicles, plug-in hybrid vehicles, and fully electric vehicles all on the same platform.
So kind of like the Kia model.
Yes, like that, but they are even building them on the same line. So we went to Dingolfing. BMW's biggest factory in Germany, and probably the world too. If it's the biggest in Germany, it's probably the biggest in the world for BMW, I mean. And it's pretty impressive because they have like 16 different type of cars, well, 15 different models of cars going down on the same line. And so you have like 16 different internal combustion engine cars going in front of you, then you see one car coming and then it stops, and then I mean sorry, I didn't mention it, so I'm still tired. You're at the battery pack station, okay, where they call it the mariage, but between the body and the battery pack. So you're at that station and you see just heist car going in front of the station all the time, bunch of heist car, then whoop, there's a car that stops at the station, and then whoop, the battery pack goes inside of it because it's a plug-in hybrid, so that they need a battery pack, like you mentioned, a 3030E or something like that. So and they want to keep that for even that 15 to 25% growth. So it's going to be always the same line, so it's a much smaller investment for them, but it's a line that can also produce thousands of cars per week. I think they said that like 1,600 per day. So that's, it's a very big plan, a lot of production capacity. So, and the other great thing about it is that everything that's not battery related or electric drivetrain related, they are already getting the economies of scale advantage with it, because it's already on the line that's producing a lot of cars per day. and is the same line that's going to produce the EVs. So all the economies of scales are there for EVs. It's more about building the powertrain and then assembling that powertrain into those cars.
So the one disadvantage of that we saw with the Kia, and I think also, sorry, the Kia Soul EV and the Hyundai Ioniq, so that these are cars that have a gas version and an electric version. So the electric version doesn't really need, you know, a big thing in the under the hood. So if you open up the hood of the Kia Soul EV, it's just like a big empty expanse. Like they could have made a you know, a boot or a frunk or whatever, but they didn't. So there's a lot of wasted space up front. But then in the back where the batteries need to go, they took some room out of the rear cabin area to put batteries. So it doesn't always translate when you're building a car to put, you know, just to rip out the internal combustion and throw in a battery setup. You know, it may make sense for assembly line stuff, but I think, I wonder
at
if...
At the design level.
Yeah, I wonder if at the design level, that's an advantage if you design from the ground up.
Yeah, I asked about that. I asked about that. But again, we didn't speak to any design people, though we speak with the product development, which more on the engineering side, and then with the production people. And when asked about any compromise that they had to make to have this multiple powertrain platform, they say that, you gave two good examples, but different examples, like the Kia Soul EV. Kia Soul EV was a platform for an internal combustion engine that was converted to an electric vehicle. The Ioniq was a platform developed to support all different powertrain. So it's still, I still think that it has to be compromised to do that, but it's a lot fewer compromises than actually converting a gas-powered car into an electric one. So that's what they brought up too. They said if you develop the platform from the get-go to support all those things, the compromise are a lot more limited because you can just make it work with having to, and especially like an all-electric one now, which is so simple with the skate design. They're all using the skate design now, and that's what I was going through. So we talked about the production type, but we also got a good look into the fifth generation thing, which was pretty cool. Was the coolest part of the trip, really, when they brought us up to a BMW building in Munich, and the in the basement of it, they are operating a big prototyping lab where they prototype all the new electric drivetrain and battery packs. They even make battery cells there. They can make.
Did you get pictures?
They gave me pictures. Weren't allowed to take pictures there, but they had a photographer that took some pictures approved by BMW. So we're going to have a bunch of pictures on the site tomorrow or early next week. But it's there's those are not pictures taken by me. Trust me, if I had been able to take pictures, I would have taken a lot of different pictures because they show us some cool stuff. They show us the prototypes of the next gen battery pack, the fifth gen battery packs. They show up an early prototype for the Ioniq, the supposedly Model 3 killer. They showed us but that's an early prototype because I mean that's not coming until like 2021 or something like that. The iX3 prototype and the electric Mini prototype.
Oh, that's cool.
But my understanding is that the electric Mini, though, is not fifth gen. It's like it's shaped like a T. It's not like the Volt battery pack.
Oh, the battery is, yeah.
Yeah, so it's not, this one is like not the skateboard-like system that's not basically standard in the industry, like since Tesla used it and everybody else that's going all electric is using it. But yeah, they still showed us that. And it looks very much like a Model 3 battery pack these days. The other the big difference, of course, is that they're still using prismatic cells. I talked to Stefan Juracek, who's the head engineer for the fifth generation for all of BMW's electric powertrain, and he said that they did consider cylindrical and pouch cells. But they already have a lot of experience with prismatic cell, of course, with the i3 and also all their PHEVs are using smaller battery pack, but with prismatic cells. And they already have that experience, and they're pretty comfortable in the way that you can do the actual modules with them. Of course, it's a lot simpler to make a modules with like 16 battery cells instead of 300 smaller cylindrical cells. and they developed some proprietary cooling system that works better with the prismatic format. So just a rectangle cell. But they showed us some charts that were that look impressive, but when you look closely, it's weird. It's like they showed us. you see today the energy density at like in their battery cell at 100%, so they don't tell us the exact energy density, but it's a 994 amp hour battery, so you could probably weight it, find it somewhere from SDI and weight it, and you get a good idea of it. And then they showed us how they think the energy density is going to progress with the cost over a period of years, but they don't give us the year. So they said like 100, it's going to be at 125% of the current capacity, 150%, 175%. But when I asked when that's going to happen, they were, oh, we don't really know. Like it's just, it's going to happen, but we're not sure how. But they're talking about like a 5% per year or something like that increase, which we've heard before from another company. I think Tesla is aiming for 8% per year, something closer to that. So the other thing that came up often too is that they want to bring a lot of the thing in-house. They want to make all the electric powertrain in-house. And they also said that they think that the battery cell is the most critical part of electric vehicles. So I asked, why are you guys bringing the cells in-house? And that's where they started to skate a little, like, oh, well, it's a big commitment to go with the battery cells. And
so if it's the most important thing, why wouldn't you bring that in-house?
Yeah, well, they do bring the development in-house. So that's what's cool about this this lab, because they can produce up to 1,000 cells themselves a year. So they can do a bunch of modules and a bunch of battery pack prototypes to test their cars and to test the batteries itself, actually. And they want to use that to get a better understanding of the battery cells, to be able to work closer with the battery manufacturers, and also to develop their own chemistry. So they're using that to develop their own chemistry, a little bit like Tesla is doing with Panasonic, for example. But so when I asked that about, are you, if the most important thing, and you're talking a lot about bringing the electric powertrain in-house, why not doing the battery cells too? They started saying like, we don't want to jeopardize our relationship with the battery manufacturers. And of course, that's a good point right now, because the manufacturers have the bigger hand of the stick right now. The demand is crazy, and if your name is BMW, you should be able to get inside the door right now. But a lot of the startups have a lot of difficulties to be taken seriously by the LG Chem and SDI, Samsung SDI, and Panasonic of this world, because there's a ton of demand right now for batteries, and just not that many manufacturers. Which is why we're starting to see new ones become a lot more relevant, like CATL in China, and even like Nordvolt now, which is very much in the startup phase, but is attracting a lot of investment because they know what's coming. They know that the demand is coming, so you're going to have a lot of batteries. Aside from batteries, we also got a very cool look at the next-gen, fifth-gen electric motors that they're doing. And then now they're not just doing the motor, they're doing like the whole drive unit all together, and it's a very compact drive unit, and that I have good pictures of that they sent me. So it's a very compact fifth gen old drivetrain combine, and they're moving away from the permanent magnets or the DC permanent magnet, doing with a stator, rotor, induction motor system, and very small.
That's interesting, yeah, because Tesla just moved to that on the Model 3 rear wheel drive.
Yeah, they did, right?
And so I'm assuming you have a lot of experience with Tesla motors. You're saying it's very compact. It's smaller than Tesla's setup?
It's smaller than the Model S setup for sure. I've seen the Model 3 more drive unit, but in terms of scale, I cannot just figure out in my mind. Like I would need to see it in person or something to get a better idea of it. Might be the same size, so I'm not sure. Don't quote me on that. But it does look very small. It looked like a regular sized baggage, like luggage for you take in the airport or something. And they said it was rated for 200 kilowatts, 200 kilowatts of continuous output, and it can do peak power of 250. So that was news, the 250, because they did announce the 200 with the iX3. but 250, that's an exclusive that you get right now. So you could be able to get a little more out of your iX3 maybe, which is going to be the first car that's going to feature that motor. And they could eventually do a performance version and put two of them inside that car.
Yeah, I was going to say the iX3, that's not that, that seems like a car that would be all-wheel drive. So the default isn't going to be all-wheel drive?
They didn't announce a dual motor system, so if it did an all-wheel drive, it would be with just one, then it doesn't make sense because of the way the drive unit is made, it's just for one axle. So I'm pretty sure at some point they should offer a dual motor system, because they did show us some schematics of dual motor powertrain. It's just, there's just nothing that was announced yet.
Yeah, well, so kind of like the Model 3, they're starting with the rear-wheel drive.
Well, there's right. The i4 that is coming, which the unveil as the dynamic vision concept. So we reported on that before. I think that as a conceptual dual-motor powertrain. Don't quote me on that, though. But I'm pretty sure. Anyway, they said it's in the plan. Anyway, everybody's doing multiple motor and electric cars now. And who is it with three now? It's the Audi e-tron Quattro.
Yeah,
yeah. People are coming.
And hopefully Chevy's got a dual motor coming.
Yeah, people are competing on the number of motors inside your cars now.
Right.
The Roadster is three now too, right?
Yeah, it's got two in the back and one in the front.
Yeah, that's cool. So yeah, that was basically just a little overview of what I looked into this week. But we're going to have more details and pictures and videos on the site pretty soon. So look out for that. I think now we can move on to Tesla, maybe.
Oh, yes, Tesla.
Tesla.
I've heard of them.
You remember them? Yep. Earlier this week, we reported on a little production update on the Model 3. Because a leaked email, an email that we got from Tesla to, not from Tesla, from Elon Musk to all Tesla employees, confirming that the Model 3 production systems are now all above 500 units per day, which confirmed that they're producing at 3,500 vehicles per week. And some of them are even at 700 cars per day. Not all of them, though. So, those that are not at 700 per day, and that could be problematic right now for the ramp up, he listed them in that email. So the paint shop output is not great yet. The GA3 line, which is the general assembly line number 3, which is the main number Model 3 line, needs improvement, and which is why they're bringing up the GA4 line, which is we're going to talk about a little later because it created some controversy this week. And end
there
of line
some controversy this week.
A lot.
Tesla.
That never happens. The models on 4, which of course we already talked about a few times, at Gigafactory 1, which is where they're doing the battery modules, and Tesla had to do a bunch of manual labor being implemented with the automated line, which was actually better than the original fully automated line. So now they're building a fourth one, which is completely automated, or mostly automated, more than the other previous line, and that still need to be arranged. But Tesla is bringing out the big guns to make it happen, because JB Straubel is in charge of that specific line, and Elon requested that everyone with things that can have any output to, that would help increasing the production of those lines should contact people that are working on them, and those people are JB Straubel for that line, but also Jérôme Guillen, who's the head of Tesla Semi now, so he should be technically working on Tesla Semi, but is in charge of the new general assembly line. So Jérôme is on that right now, and a bunch of other people, like one of Elon's lieutenant, is also on one of the criticals area. But yeah, this new line, it's inside a tent set.
Well, you know, they're well, very nice tents.
Yeah, I mean,
it's not like a Coleman.
Oh, sorry, I'm thinking lagging. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, you're good.
All right, sorry. Yeah, we are calling it the tent. I think Elon called it a tent too.
Yeah,
but it's not
a
really a tent, right? It's like,
it's not like a Coleman, you know, two-person backpack tent, no.
Yeah, it's not a camping tent. It's a sprung structure, it's called. Officially, it's not. It's temporary. It's at least if you look at Build Zoom, which has the construction permit application for anything that Tesla is constructing at the Fremont factory, they applied for a temporary permit for that. So it's not. It shouldn't be permanent. But Musk said that it could. They could leave it there and not put the line in an actual building. And we got a bunch of comments from other people that use similar products, and apparently just no problem leaving that as a permanent system. I'm sure in different climates it's not ideal.
Right, California is a good place to have a tent.
Yeah, it totally is.
You skipped out a little bit there, but I think they have a permit for 6 months, right? Is that what, that's what the... That's why we think it's a temporary thing.
Yeah, that's what he said. But I doubt it's just for 6 months, because how do you build a building around that? What do you do?
I mean, theoretically, I guess you could build another. While these things are going, you could build another line. The question is, like, I thought there was plenty of room at NUMMI. It's like the biggest structure in the planet or something.
Yeah, one of the biggest ones.
Like, they ran out of space in there already?
Yeah, that was a confusing thing, because
how many BMWs are coming out of that factory you were at?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like they it's weird that they ran out of space so quickly.
Yeah, well, the BMW factory was insane in terms of size, but it was like a bunch of different buildings spread out on a bigger region, but no building as big as the Fremont factory. But right, more buildings spread out, and over the last few years, Tesla has done the same thing in Fremont. I mean, they bought or they leased at least a bunch of buildings all around the, not just Fremont, but all around the East Bay area. So the fact that I think they might be running out of space in Fremont. I think they are running out of space.
Yeah, I mean, they can't build the semi there, and they can't build the Model Y there.
Yeah,
we found out so. It does seem like they are getting a little tight, but I didn't realize how tight.
Yeah. But, yeah, the fact that what we just said and everything, of course, that was like catnip for the Tesla shorts and the Tesla naysayers, right? Because, Tesla is now resolved to just build cars inside of a, like you said, a Coleman tent. But, yeah, Elon first, we mentioned it in our late email that the GA4 line is now inside the tent, and Elon also showed that the first performance Model 3 was built on that that line, and it looks like they're still building it up, but I think it's necessary for them to have it like running at a decent pace in order to get to 5,000 cars per week by the end of the month. And I mean, Elon now looks just more confident than ever about eating that. You can look at a bunch of things, and I would like to have like full access and be able to tell you exactly what's going to happen and everything and what's the state right now. But unfortunately, I think right now Elon Musk has the best idea of it. So you have to gauge, without more information, you have to gauge just how confident is it about hitting it. And the best proof of it is that when he tweeted at me earlier this week, that Tesla shorts have about 3 weeks before their position explodes. And 3 weeks, of course, matches the end of the month. So the release, not the end of the month, but within the first week of July, Tesla's going to have to release their production numbers and the delivery numbers. So we're going to know exactly how many cars they produce and what's the production rate when they exited the quarter. And he looks pretty confident it's going to be a pretty significant number, I think.
Yeah, he's really at war with the shorts, which... You know, it's great for us because we like the drama, I guess. But
yeah,
it seems like a kind of a distraction. Like, I don't think Ford CEOs are at war with the shorts very often.
Yeah, but the short position against Ford is not that big either.
Right, right.
So, and I mean, Tesla is so polarizing. Is that a word?
Polarizing. Yeah.
Polarizing. And so you love it or you hate it. That's right. How a lot of people see it. So they attract a lot of haters. And of course, people have already lost a ton of money on Tesla. That's the other thing that you have to understand with the shorts. There was a big short squeeze back in 2013. And during that short squeeze, a lot of people lost a lot of money on Tesla, shorting Tesla. And if you didn't change your mind after that, if you lost all that money and you didn't change your mind, you still think that Tesla is going to get killed as soon as a bunch of other automakers are going to release EVs, Tesla's going to lose market shares, and nobody's going to buy the car anymore, and they can produce it and be profitable. So if you didn't change all that mindset, and then Tesla stock kept going up, and you lost a bunch of money to it, well, you're going to add to your position when you go up, because you think, oh, I'm just going to get back my money, because you're going to crash even harder, because, you know, the taller you are, the harder you fall. So now they are doubling down on those losses and this position. So I think that's part of it, because I've seen and I think you mentioned it last week too, or earlier this week on Twitter. You said like the amount of hate toward Tesla right now being propagated is higher than ever.
It does feel like we've hit a all-time high with the shorts. I mean, like, I don't even know how these people are even, like, how they're paying their bills right now. I feel like they should all be broke. Like, I don't know how they're still even in existence. Like, I don't understand. Like, I understand how shorting works, but I don't understand how they've managed to keep their short position for so long as Tesla stock has been going up and up and up and
what
up.
I'm saying that they might have sold it at some point and just taken a loss and then get back on it once it got another run up, like right now at three.
But that's a lot of money they've already lost. I mean, they're serious about it.
Well, I mean, there's billions of dollars right now worth of short position on Tesla. So it's not like you can add up by a bunch of small investors, but there's also like large hedge funds betting against Tesla. I mean, Jim Chanos is betting against Tesla. And there's another big hedge funds guy that I forget his name. Ackerman? Is it Ackerman that betted against Tesla?
I'm not sure.
Ackerman or the other one that looks just like him, bet it against Tesla. Well, at least at some point did. Might have unloaded his position.
And I'm also, like, I've said this before, but I'm also very kind of curious, like, why is there this magic 5,000 a week number? Like, what if Tesla only hits 4,800 a week? Or what if they hit 5,200? Or why does it have to happen right now, that number? I mean, is that the number at which Tesla needs to borrow or doesn't need to borrow?
Yeah, well, to some level, yes. But, I mean, for sure, if they don't eat 5,000, it's just a headline thing. Like, you can say, oh, Tesla missed the mark, so the short just feeds into it. But, of course, like, if Tesla, it's 4,500 per week. I mean, it's still... forget 4,500 per week. Right now, Tesla is producing more electric vehicles, all electric vehicles, than any other manufacturer in the world. Like, it is already the electric... The Model 3 program is already the fastest growing electric vehicle in the world. It is. It's just his.
Yeah, there's no precedent for it in the history of man.
Yeah, like, so
it's already way bigger, way faster. There's a bigger line for it. And, you know, frankly, nobody, like most humans have never seen it. Like 99% of, you know, potential customers have never even seen one, let alone sat in one or driven one. So it's already kind of crazy.
Yeah, so no matter how you want to bash Tesla on missing production deadline and not being good at production and everything, they're still arguably the best electric vehicle manufacturer in the world. So that's something to consider. But yeah, they've been late on Model 3 production. There's no doubt about it. And what you just said about why the 5,000 per week is so important, 5,000 per week was originally announced in December 2017. We're now in June 2018. So that goal has been late. It's been 6 months late, so they have to hit it. That's why. But they have to, just because, of course, it's going to have another delays. And I think also the other thing is on the consumer's perspective, especially in the U.S. with the federal tax credit coming.
Right.
People want their car. They want to be able to take advantage of that, not being just because. And of course, it's like, oh, more people getting subsidies for buying a luxury vehicle, whatever. Yeah, but it's people that have been reserving the car for like 2 years or something. And when they reserved it, they thought for sure that they were getting that $7,500. So you take that into account and your budget and everything. So it does it's a big pain if you don't get it or you don't get the full amount. So right now, because right now, the only question is, do you get 7,500 or do you get 3,500? Because of course it's a phase out period. Now we're also a ring this week. I didn't report on it yet because it still looks a little bit rumory to me, but like a rumor. But in Ontario, which of course Model 3 be very popular with the $14,000 incentive that they have on it. And now Forbes might afford, not Forbes, Ford, Doug Ford, the new prime minister, just removed the green energy incentive. And now there's rumors that he's going to remove the EV incentive too. So if it does that, like the ton of Model 3 reservation holder in Ontario are getting very nervous.
So is that guy related to Rob Ford?
Yeah, he is. He's
former,
his brother.
Former mayor of Toronto?
Yeah, it's his brother. Really? They were brothers, yeah.
They were war brothers. Incredible.
Yeah, people still voted for him. And he was a consul, a councilman on Rob Ford's administration on the city council in Toronto.
That's incredible.
So they were like pretty close. But people still like Rob Ford after his fall and in disgrace.
He had some minor issues.
Yeah, yeah.
Little crack.
Yeah, when you're a crack addict.
You know, some people like coffee.
Yeah, it does work. Morning. I mean, right. Well, I don't know enough about his track record on actual policies in the city of Toronto to just comment on his performance as a mayor, but he was quite liked by a few people, so we don't know. Speaking of weird weird instances, how about that Tesla sabotage and hacking scandal?
Sabotage. Saboteur. Crazy.
Yeah, so we first reported on that, again, from leaked emails back on Monday. Musk sent an email with the subject line being "some concerning news." When I got that, I was quite surprised by the content of it, which at first, in the first email, it was even weirder than what we actually came out, because Elon was suggesting that might be some kind of oil industry, fossil fuel industry conspiracy that did some sabotage at Tesla's production systems. But it's actually a Tesla employee that uploaded some malicious code that did some problem in Tesla's manufacturing system. And he exported a ton of data from Tesla's system too, and transferred that to, at the time, an outside, I'm quoting, outside organizations. So we weren't being clear about that. Today we know that those outside organizations was basically only media outlet, I think. Or at least we don't have any indication that it's nothing else than media outlet. So the old conspiracy thing, probably out of the question right now. I don't know if you agree with that. You did an electric stake piece on it. I think you said that's
yeah. So it doesn't seem like at least direct. I mean, you know, maybe he reached out to some oil conspiracy folks, or sorry, oil company folks, and said, "Hey, I got a bunch of data," and theoretically they could have been like, "Oh, that's cool. We'll take your data." But I don't think like necessarily Gigafactory data is going to be that important to those folks. I don't know. Like, all this stuff, like, you know, things will come out, I'm sure. That'll be interesting. But it doesn't seem like this was something that was cooked up by the Koch brothers, for instance.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, in terms of, like, fossil fuel industry using that data, is that we know that fossil industry did some smear campaign on Elon Musk.
Yeah.
And they did some smear campaign on electric vehicles in general. So you could have used that data more effectively to smear Tesla, I think. But it looks like he did it himself with the media, trying to represent the data in a negative light for Tesla. They didn't do a very good job at it. So,
but yeah, he was really weird about it, too.
Yeah, so if he would have gone through the fossil fuel industry, I think it would have been they have a lot more experience with smearing people, so they would have been better.
Right, it would have been much more eloquent.
So instead they went with direct, instead of going to fossil fuel, then media, he went directly to the media. And we saw some pieces from Business Insiders and from CNBC that looks like they used those data from Martin Tripp. Is his name now?
His name? Sounds like Martian Tripp, which not related. You know, I found it kind of interesting that neither Laura Kolodny at CNBC or Business Insider did any kind of retractions or just acknowledgement that their stories were based, which, you know, everybody was kind of scratching.
I think about it, Business Insider did on one of them, on did one they? Of their story. Like,
well, CNBC and Laura Kolodny, when I checked, had not upgraded their or updated their post to say, hey, this information is based on this guy who doesn't sound, you know, very stable, very, you know, neutral, very, like, it seemed like he had a vendetta.
Or he was, at least, even if you don't want to say that, just say who he is, like, because one thing for sure is a disgruntled Tesla employees. Like, whatever right. what he says is true or not is a disgruntled Tesla employees.
Right.
When they first posted the article, it was a source, an anonymous source. So, of course, you don't dox him, you don't hot him or anything like that.
Right.
And maybe they didn't know he was a disgruntled Tesla employee, or he was still a Tesla employee at that time. So
right,
that's
but
fine.
You should upgrade the story,
yeah,
noting that
exactly. Now you know that he's a disgruntled
employee.
You have
this information, which kind of calls into question the accuracy of the stuff you're reporting.
Exactly.
But CNBC didn't do anything.
Yeah,
kind of like.
But Laura, if you know her history on the reporting on Tesla, she's only report. Bad report on Tesla. Like, there's no right. nothing positive about the company. It has to be negative for her to report on it. So that's a bummer. And it looks like most of her information is from, like, former Tesla employees that are just disgruntled. So
right, that's kind of her MO, is like, let's try to. I mean, the one about the scrap material, that was like, it made no sense to me at all. It seemed like you're trying to, like, of course there's going to be scrap material. It's you know, you're building stuff. Like, why is that surprising? Why would Tesla, like, try? They weren't trying to hide the scrap material. It just made, like, I didn't, like, if you're looking at it from a short perspective and you're saying to yourself, we have to find some problems, like, we have to, like, find some area where Tesla's doing something poorly and report on it, then it makes sense to make these reports.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're looking at it in any other light...
A newspaper study. It's like, it is newsworthy.
Right. It's just not. It doesn't make sense at all. So, I mean, I
it makes sense if you can find someone that is an expert that can say, oh, that's too many scrap. But, like, I think she did put an analyst view on it, but it was super vague. Because and we didn't really get those statistics aside from, like, a vague million-dollar member number or something. But
yeah.
So, I mean, there might be an issue, but that thing didn't prove it at all. And that was the main thing from his leak of information, really, because the other one, the punctured battery pack, like, what's your data on that? Like, if he did come out with data that was proving things, like, we didn't see any data like that at all. And if he did send them to the media, and the media, and especially if there was media that are notoriously quick to try to paint Tesla negative light, they would have posted that data very quickly. So either they didn't understand it, they couldn't find a way to understand that data and interpret it in a way that they could communicate to the readers, or that data was bullshit.
Also, why in the world would Tesla put punctured battery packs in their cars?
Yeah, there's no winning.
That seems like, duh. Like, why would they do that? So I don't know. I don't like the whole thing. Like, I feel like this is kind of opening a window for people who are kind of looking in and how the media covers Tesla. It also kind of gives Elon Musk a little, you kind of know the backstory of why he's so pissed at the media mm-hmm. lately.
Yeah.
So for me, that was a little bit like, oh, I get it. Now I understand why he's going apeshit. So I don't know. I just, you know, like, when I read a CNBC report, I'm going to give it a little bit less.
Yeah, you have to keep that in mind, right?
Right.
And the other thing, like, you know, of course, there was also the thing that Tesla called the police on him because a friend of his told Tesla that he talked about shooting up the Gigafactory. And the police looked into it, and they didn't find it to be a credible threat. So that's a he said, she said situation. So even taking that aside, if you just look at the emails between him and Elon Musk that he released, like I tried to read that those emails, like, because I just read the thing about the police report, so I thought that was a he said situation. So let's say I don't look at it from a Tesla enthusiast point of view. I don't calculate that the Tesla short point of view. I just look at it objectively, and I read this this email exchange. The guy sounds crazy. Like, no matter what's your opinion on Tesla, what's your opinion on Elon Musk, the guy sounds just crazy. So,
well, I mean, who emails the CEO and does caps lock on, you know, like,
yeah,
that's I mean, right there, like, that's kind of nuts.
Yeah, the caps lock thing sounds like just a Twitter rant against someone. Like, that's what I do if I do a Twitter rant against someone.
Right, but it's like that's like a short Twitter account.
And the first, it's not officially, like, it's, I think you couldn't make the point that it's a threat in court. But with the fact that he potentially made a shooting threat, and he started the email with saying that you have what's coming to you to Elon Musk, both of those combined sounds like threatening a little bit. Well, I don't think that's going to hold up in court.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll get settled out of court.
Yeah.
So yeah, moving on, we have the autopilot nag.
Yeah, that was a big thing too, right? That was a big thing this week. So Elon announced it a few weeks back that it's gonna change, but now it's official in the software update. I don't have the number here. I don't have the number.
I don't have it on hand.
Okay, that's weird. Sorry about that. I think it's 24.0.1, something like that. 24.1, 2018, 24.1. Yep, that's it. They updated all the steering wheel to clarify now it's apply light pressure on the skid, apply light force to the steering wheel. So the problem is that with the previous update, autopilot nag, so the alert to hold the steering wheel. So some of the JPays has about autopilot nag. Autopilot nag is the what people call the alert that tells you to hold the steering wheel now. And it used to be as simple as hold the steering wheel. But with the latest alert, it was so often too that people were just getting a hold of the steering wheel. But the sensor don't really detect that. You detect a torque. It's a torque sensor, so you need to apply some pressure on it. So people were actually holding it and still getting the alert, and like, oh, what's going on? So now Tesla's changed that to apply a light force to this thing. So you have to move it a little. So you have to move it a little, but you have to be careful not to move it too much, because then you disengage auto-steer, which is counterintuitive to what auto-steer should be.
Or you steer your car off the road.
Yeah, well, now you're applying a lot of pressure on it.
Right.
So it should be just light pressure. So I think, like, it's getting pretty ridiculous right now. Like, they're telling you, move the steering wheel for a feature that's supposed to move the steering wheel for you. But, of course, the logic behind it is that Tesla needs to make sure that people are keeping attention when using the autopilot. And that's very important to do. And they don't have many ways to make sure that people are staying vigilant and are ready to take control if necessary. So if that's the best way to do it, that's the only way to do it, it's automatically the best way to do it. Of course, like someone like GM Cruise has a driver monitoring system based on a camera that's tracking your eyes, make sure that you're looking at the roads, and it's working pretty well. Tesla doesn't have that right now. Might have been a solution.
It's working well, but it's in very, very limited places, and it's only in one Cadillac model, the CT6, and it's only in certain versions of that model.
Yeah, well,
which doesn't include the hybrid version of that.
The limitation of the CT6 Super Cruise system, though, it's more about the actual auto steer on the road. You need to map the road to get the highway. The technology for the eye tracking system you said works pretty well, right? That's not any limitation on it. So,
I mean, theoretically, you could put like a doll right in front of the camera, and just fall asleep.
Yeah, now you're going the extra mile to really try
I mean, that's what these Tesla guys are doing, right? The other story we're talking about is the buddy hack.
Yeah, the autopilot buddy. that was a thing that people tried to get us to sell for a while. I got so many emails from them well, not just them, maybe, but also like other people who might have been associated with the company to try to get us to promote it. And they got a bunch of Tesla people. When I say Tesla people, I don't mean like Tesla employees, but other Tesla YouTubers, Tesla bloggers to try to promote the thing. So I had gotten fairly popular at some point. And of course, the thing is only just a weight, really. Like it's a weight that attached to a side of the steering wheel, so that it always does that little apply a little force on the wheel. So with and not enough force to disengage it. So technically, you stop getting the alerts. But so if technically, I don't have that big of an issue with the system. If you're someone that just keeps attention all the time and just think that it's better not to have your hands on the wheel. But for most people that would use it, it's not for that will use it. You will use it not to pay attention and be able to do something else. So that's the biggest issue. And my biggest issue with the product, though, it's a $200 weight.
It's really dumb. You could just get some Play-Doh.
Yeah, but exactly. You get Play-Doh is the best thing. Some guy we posted a video in the on the article that we did. Some guy used an apple, not an apple, an orange. Put an orange, the same. We'll do the same thing. So right. They're just trying to exert some money from Tesla drivers, really. And why we wrote an article about it is that NHTSA got involved because the U.S. Department of Transportation. They issue a cease and desist to the company because they deemed it unsafe, which is fair. I mean, like I said, some people could use it just because they really don't want the alert, but they always stay very vigilant and everything. That would be fine. It'd be similar to having a high tracking system. Like if you're your home drive tracking system and you're sure you're going to always pay attention. But of course, that's not why people use the system. They use the system to not have to pay attention.
I mean, so on a high level, I kind of feel like that Tesla didn't really anticipate the need to have to keep drivers from, like, you know, going to sleep or reading books. Mm-hmm. They would say, you know, I think Tesla was like, hey, you know, in this period of time where we don't have full autonomy, the drivers will, you know, because they don't want to die or they don't want to kill people, they're just going to pay attention to the road when we say that, you know, this car only does level two. The problem is that, of course, we can't have nice things. We have to do idiotic things. So the drivers are going to sleep or doing whatever. And so Tesla had to kind of like jerry rig or hack this system of seeing if you're paying attention or not. And just because you have, you know, your hands on the wheels doesn't mean you're necessarily paying attention either. You could have your hands on the wheels and, you know, looking at a video game or something. So this is kind of a hack. This is kind of a temporary problem, I think, until the, you know, autonomy 3 and 4 start happening. But, you know, for now, it feels very hacky.
Yeah, it does. It does. Like, it's more a reaction to a problem than Tesla just building driver monitoring system into autopilot.
I mean, theoretically, the Model 3 could, you know, the camera in the Model 3 inside could keep an eye on you and make sure you're looking ahead if it had, you know, the intelligence or whatever.
Yeah, if it has the resolution and the AI computer vision capability, which Tesla could probably build time. But yeah, that's only solved the issue for the Model 3, though.
Yeah, and I think Tesla's looking ahead. Like, this is just a kind of a hiccup along the way. Like, I feel like they want you to not have to put your hands on the wheel, and they want you to not have to even pay attention to the road at some point. We're just not there yet. So,
yeah, and so if Autopilot improve up to level 3, level 4, you certainly wouldn't need that much. And Autopilot is improving. It is improving a lot. And what we posted earlier this week that I suggest you go take a look at, because it was very informative about Autopilot. And I'm not just patting myself on the back here, because while I did publish the post, it was mainly a post written by our good friend Very Green, who's known some sort of as a Tesla hacker, if you will, because he some pretty extensive knowledge of Tesla software. And with a few other Tesla hacker friends, if you will, he managed to put together snapshots from his car, not his cars, but other cars, because he's able to intercept, you find a way to intercept the packages that Tesla uploads from your car that has autopilot to his the company server in order to build up their labeling system and understand what the autopilot can see and how it understand what it can see. So go check it out on Electrek. It's the postal cars are a rare look at what Tesla autopilot can see and interpret, because that's the important part. It's interpret, because he was able to take those snapshots that Tesla takes from the autopilot camera and superimpose on those snapshot data information from the autopilot system, so it can you can visualize basically what the autopilot can understand from those images. So you can see, oh, that's a moving car, that's a stationary car, that car is parked, that's an object in the road or something. So very interesting stuff. And we added a bunch of videos to the article too. Very fun.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, the green versus orange. Like, the orange is stationary stuff, the green is moving stuff.
And Tesla takes things from a bunch of different scenarios. You have a border crossing in there that we added to the post from Very Green again. Very cool stuff. Moving on just quickly, because we're already an hour in now. Tesla also added another feature this week with the software update that adds the ability to limit the speed on your car. So we all know about the valet mode already on Tesla's vehicles that allow you to limit the top speed, limit the power and acceleration, as well as lock a bunch of things like the glove box and information like your personal information that are in the setting of Tesla's vehicles. But now you have a separate feature from that doesn't do everything that we just said. It's just limit the speed. So for example, if you're loaning a car to your kid that just started to learn how to drive, and now you're very nervous about lending a car that can go from 0 to 60 in just a few seconds. Now you won't even go to 60. It'll lock you at 50 miles per hour.
You'll be dangerous on the highway.
Yeah, that's excessive, I think. So you can set the limit between 50 and 90. So it's more about you cannot go too fast too. So that's 80 to 145 kilometer an hour. By the way, talking about speed limit, for my first time I was able to drive faster than the speed limit for the German highway. We got to 260 at the on the autobahn, which was
260 crazy. Kilometers.
Yeah, come on, yeah. Yeah.
So what is that in miles?
260, that has to be like over what is it, 180 or something?
That's pretty quick.
Yeah, it's that what 1.6? It's 0.7. I think it's 260 times 0.7, I think. Is that it?
I was only able on the track.
280. 180. It's a 260 is 180. I mean.
Okay. On the track in Portugal, I was only able to get the I-Pace to about 190 something. Which, you know, the top speed is around 200 kilometers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's only like 125 miles per hour.
Yeah. You start to see the difference at 200, though.
Yeah.
Things start to go fast next to you. But that wasn't in an EV, though. That was like in the car servers that we had. We had some M series.
Wow.
I don't remember which M series it was, though. It was the big one. So maybe that was the big M8? One. Or M7, I don't know. I'm not very familiar with the gas-powered vehicles, but it was one of the big M series from BMW. Finishing up real quick, quick one on Porsche, because I thought it was pretty exciting that this week Porsche invested, took a big, 10% stake inside the electric hypercar startup Rimac. Rimac, is that how you say it? Rimac?
Yep.
Yeah. So I think most people know about Rimac at this point, like the maker of the concept.
Most of our folks do. But
yeah.
Most human beings do not.
Yeah. Correct. Most of our listeners and readers on Electrek know that Rimac is a small Croatian startup that builds the concept one, which was arguably like the first like mainstream all electric hypercar. pretty insane car. Now they're making the Concept 2, which is even more impressive, which is even technically like almost competitive with the Roadster, aside from the price. It's three times more expensive than the Roadster, even more, like four times more expensive than the Roadster. But they've changed a bit of their business model over the last few years. So they're not just a maker of electric hypercar. Now they're also like a OEM. They're a supplier. They supply their battery pack because they make all their own battery pack technology, and they supply that to other automakers. We've seen them doing to Koenigsegg, like the Swedish, mm-hmm. Swedish supercar maker, and Aston Martin.
Yeah, a little side note. When I was at Jaguar in Portugal, they said that the Type 3 or whatever the Prince rode in after they got married was built by Rimac.
And, oh, cool.
Yeah, actually Jaguar has some sort of relationship, which they wouldn't go into, with Rimac. So I wouldn't be surprised if the I-Pace had some Rimac stuff in it as well.
Yeah, well, I think Jaguar is also like a hypercar project too. The more about luxury thing than like high performance, like hypercar. But I've heard rumors about that, so mm-hmm. maybe they have something like that in project. Because even though they are a supplier, they're still a supplier of hypercars, basically. Because even the Aston Martin that we're talking about, it's like Aston Martin's hypercar. It's not like the Rapid E or anything. Though they might have something to do with the Rapid E2, we're not sure. But over the last few years, that business, like because of that, they grew a lot. So they showcased the technology with the hypercars, but then they focus on being a supplier. And they secured like a $36 million investment from a Chinese battery firm last year. And now it's Porsche Stern, which is, of course, a little bit more exciting because Porsche is also working on its electrification systems. So maybe Rimac can give them a hand there and help them improve. So they took a 10% stake for an undisclosed amount. But at this point, I think that amount could have been pretty cool. And Rimac is fun too. Matt Rimac, the founder, is a young guy who's a pretty impressive engineer. So he built his own BMW conversion when he was still very young, and he's still very young today. So pretty exciting stuff that coming from Rimac. We're going to have to go visit them at some point, Seth. Do a little creation trip.
I think summer is about the best time to do that.
Yeah. Well, isn't like summer all year long in Croatia?
It's I don't know. It's right on the Adriatic. It's probably pretty nice there.
Yeah,
most of the time.
It's more like
Zagreb, I hear, is nice.
South of France weather type of thing, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're gonna leave you on that, guys. Today, that's about it for this week's episode. And of course, we'll always big thanks to our Electrek supporters on Patreon, patreon.com/Electrek. We have a bunch of gear coming to you soon. We're going to work on that. And thanks a lot just for listening and watching, too. We always appreciate your time. And we're going to see you again next week. Bye-bye.